Okay, so here we are. This is the fourth new moon day of God's sacred year. And as I just said in the prayer, the full holy day season is going to be here before we know it. Let's just go back, think back for 2,000 years ago to the fall feast celebrations at the temple in Jerusalem. It's interesting to consider that Jesus would have been there keeping the holy days at that time. So we question what you think that it would have been like at the temple, for instance, on the Feast of Trumpets. How do you picture it? Do you think it'd be solemn and quiet and serene? Perhaps something like a great, majestic Anglican cathedral? If that's how you picture it, forget that image, because it was nothing at all like that. Nor was it anything like any of us have ever experienced in our lifetime. There would have been thousands of Israelites, mostly Jews, tribe of Judah. They would have been crowded into the court of the Israelites and the court of women, and that would be the closest that they were allowed to approach to the altar and the sacred temple buildings. On that day, on the Feast of Trumpets, there would have been 17,000 priests and Levites who would have been on duty. This is in Herod's temple there. Would have been on duty. And you can imagine they'd be resplendent in their special holy day uniforms. But despite all of that majesty, just a few feet away, just a couple of meters away from the precious and sacred most holy place, the court of the priests smelt and sounded like a stockyard or a farmer's market, with the smells and the sounds of all of the animal sacrifices which had been specially selected for this holy day. Bulls, rams, lambs and goats. The very best of their species, it's true, but still noisy, smelly animals. So if you add to these smells and sounds the odours of cereal, flour, olive oil and wine and something akin to whiskey, then the mental picture would be complete. And I don't think our old Anglican Archbishop would approve, especially of all of this going on in his cathedral, even during the Harvest Festival. But the point that I want to concentrate on is that all of these offerings, the animals, the cereal, the alcoholic beverages, were the very best of their kind. A great deal of care had gone into their selection, and even more care would go into the preparation and sacrifice. They were meant to be offerings of the very highest quality. So again, in this New Moon Bible study this evening, as we start thinking about our preparations for the four holy days, I'd like all of us to think about it and encourage us all to ensure that, just like those temple sacrifices, that all of our holy day offerings will be of the highest possible quality. Okay, so the quantities, please turn to Numbers chapter 29. Numbers chapter 29. The quantity and the quality and the value of these holy day offerings at the temple was truly staggering. Here's what God commanded to be given for the special Feast of Trumpets holy day offering. Numbers chapter 29 and verse 1. And in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work. It is a day of blowing the trumpets unto you. And you shall offer a burnt offering for a sweet savour unto the Eternal, one young bullock, one ram, and seven lambs of the first year, without blemish. That's important. And their meat offering, or meal offering, shall be of flour mingled with oil, 3/10 deals, for a bullock, that 3/10 deals works out at about 32 litres. 32 litres. and 2/10 dales, that's about 6 litres for a ram, and 1/10 dale, that's about 3 litres for one lamb, throughout the 7 lambs, and 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering to make an atonement for you. Beside, and so in addition to the burnt offering of the month that they gave on the new moon day, and its meal offering, and the daily or continual burnt offering, and its meal offering, and their drink offerings, according unto their manner, for a sweet savour, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Eternal. So, you see, what were these in verse 6 there? There was 2 more offerings that they had to give. What were these additional new moon burnt offerings and daily or continual burnt offerings? And they're described in the previous chapter. So let's go back to chapter 28. Numbers chapter 28 and verse 11. And in the beginnings of your months, okay, so on the new moon days, you shall offer a burnt offering unto the Lord, 2 young bullocks and 1 ram, 7 lambs of the first year without spot. Okay. And 3/10 deals, again, 10 litres there, about 10 litres of flour for a meal offering mingled with oil for 1 bullock, and 2/10 deals, that's about 6 litres of flour for a meal offering mingled with oil for 1 ram. Thanks. And a several 10th deal, that's about 3 litres of flour mingled with oil for a meal offering unto 1 lamb for a burnt offering of a sweet savour, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Lord. Probably smelt something like a pie once it was all done. And their drink offerings shall be half an hin, that's about 3 litres of wine, unto a bullock, and a third part of a hin, 2 litres, unto a ram, and a fourth part of a hin, about 1.5 litres, unto a lamb. This is the burnt offering of every month, every new moon, throughout the months of the year. And 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering unto the Lord shall be offered beside the continual burnt offering and its drink offering. So that was the requirement for the new moon offerings. And next we go to the details for the daily or continual burnt offering, and that's further back in the chapter, starting at verse 3. So still in Numbers 28 and verse 3. And you shall say unto them, this is the offering made by fire, which you shall offer unto the Eternal. 2 lambs of the first year, without spot, there it is again, day by day, for a continual or daily burnt offering. The 1 lamb shall you offer in the morning, and the other lamb shall you offer at even. And a 10th part of an ephah, 3 litres of flour, for a meal offering, mingled with the 4th part of a hin, 1.5 litres of beaten oil. It is a continual burnt offering which was ordained in Mount Sinai for a sweet savour, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Eternal. And the drink offering thereof shall be the 4th part of a hin, 1.5 litres, for the 1 lamb in the holy place shall you cause the strong wine to be poured unto the Eternal for a drink offering, and the other lamb shall you offer at even, as the meal offering of the morning, and as the drink offering thereof you shall offer it, a sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savour unto the Eternal. So, if we take all of those items on the Feast of Trumpets, here's what was offered at the temple every year. 3 young bulls, 2 rams, 16 male lambs, 2 male goats, 92 litres of cereal, 16 litres of wine, 3 litres each of strong drink, and olive oil. And you have to remember that all of these were the very best of their kind. Now, I used to work with a guy who was a sheep farmer. I worked with him down in the Victoria area, and he told me he actually bought a prize breeding lamb, and he didn't pay this for it, but a guy had brought it up to an agricultural show in the Victoria area, and this breeding ram cost this other guy more than $16,000, right? So it gives you an idea of what a quality, you know, we don't think of animals, unless our little dogs and that, you know, we think of them as being quality. We don't think of like sheep and cattle as being, you know, valuable in that respect. Also, if you think about the best wine and whiskey that you can buy, and we went to the feast, and the first feast after Worldwide was in Whistler, and we went to a restaurant, and on the menu there was a bottle of wine for $1,600. You know, didn't buy it. Don wasn't there. Don would have bought it. Yeah. And I thought, what about strong drink? What about whiskey? I looked it up on the internet today, and the most valuable whiskies can go for one bottle of whiskey. You can pay between $30,000 and $40,000 for a bottle of whiskey. You know, I'm not saying that. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that this is what. I'm just giving you an idea of what a truly quality offering could be. So the idea, though, is that the total value of those Feast of Trumpets offerings could have amounted to a small fortune, you know, if they gave the highest quality ones. But the attention to the detail and the preparation of them must have been really something to behold. And we know that, like, God, even though physical food and drink mean relatively little to him, he really does appreciate the thought and the effort behind quality offerings, and for good reason. Let's go to Hebrews, where we've been a lot in our Bible studies. Hebrews chapter 9. We're going to be going through this even more detail in the next couple of weeks. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 8. Hebrews 9 verse 8. The Holy Spirit, this signifying that the way into the holiest of all was not yet made manifest, while as the first tabernacle was yet standing, which was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices, that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience. Jump down to verse 12. Neither by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, Jesus' own blood, he entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. Jump all the way down to verse 22. And almost all things are by the law, Sinai covenant law, purged with blood, and without shedding of blood is no remission. It was therefore necessary that the patterns of things in the heavens should be purified with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ has not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. So again, we've been discussing these things in our Abrahamic covenant studies, that although the Sinai covenant offerings could not actually forgive sin, they, along with the temple and the Levitical priesthood, were symbols of important, precious, heavenly things, things that could forgive sin, including the sacrifice of our Saviour. Going back, way back, many years before Sinai, many years before God instituted the Levitical priesthood and its associated offerings, he was pleased with righteous Abel, and he was pleased with Abel's high quality offerings. Let's take a look at Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4, just one verse here. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4. By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he, being dead, yet speaks. as a great lesson, let's go to Luke chapter 21, please. Luke chapter 21. And a great lesson here from Jesus, who looks on the heart. And he was touched by the tiny but high quality offering of this poor unnamed widow. Luke chapter 21 verse 1. And talking about Jesus, he looked up and he saw the rich men casting their gifts into the treasury. That's an interesting thing to keep in mind. And he saw also a certain poor widow casting in their two mites. And he said, "Of a truth I say unto you, that this poor widow has cast in more than they all, more than all of the rich men. For all these have of their abundance cast in unto the offerings of God, but she of her penury," which means utter poverty, "has cast in all the living that she had." So, wonderful lesson from Jesus there. We're going to come back to that in a minute. So let's look at an account of the perhaps somewhat lesser known but high quality offering back in 2 Samuel chapter 24. 2 Samuel chapter 24. And Gad, the prophet Gad, came that day to David and said unto him, "Go up, rear an altar unto the Eternal in the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite." And David, according to the saying of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded. And Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming on towards him. And Araunah went out and bowed himself before the king on his face upon the ground. And Araunah said, "Why is my lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor of you, to build an altar unto the Lord, that the plague may be stayed from the people." Because this was at the time of God's plague on Israel as a punishment for David's unauthorized census. Verse 22. And Araunah said unto David, "Let my lord the king take and offer up what seems good unto him. Behold, here be oxen for burnt sacrifice, and threshing instruments, and other instruments of the oxen for wood." This interesting verse here, verse 23. "All these things did Araunah as a king give unto the king." He offered them unto the real king. It was a kingly gesture what he did. He offered unto the king, and Araunah said unto the king, "The Lord your God accept you." Verse 24, "And the king said unto Araunah, No, but I will surely buy it of you at a price, neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Eternal my God of that which does cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And David built there an altar unto the Eternal and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Eternal was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. So now David, he sinned, you know, he was a man, but he was a man after God's own heart, even though he did sin. But he refused to give an offering to God that had cost him nothing. He knew that some monetary or otherwise physical sacrifice was mandatory. And God saw the quality of David's sacrifice and answered his prayer in a positive way. Conversely, God frowns on poor quality offerings. Not talking about small offerings, because we've seen the widow's mite there. Poor quality offerings. Cain gave a poor quality offering and paid the penalty. But again, the quality of an offering does not necessarily depend on its monetary value or amount. Again, Luke 21, the widow's mite. That poor widow will be remembered for eternity, probably, for her tiny offering, whereas husband and wife team, Ananias and Sapphira, lost their lives by giving a sizable amount from the proceeds of a real estate sale. But it was done in vain. Their offering was in vain. They were lying and they were deceitful and their attitude was wrong. Let's take a look at it. Acts chapter 5 and verse 1. Acts chapter 5 and verse 1. Acts 5 verse 1. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back part of the price of the land? While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your own power? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied unto men, but unto God. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down, gave up the ghost, gave up the human spirit. And great fear came on all them that heard these things. And the young men arose, wound him up, and carried him out, and buried him. And it was about the space of 3 hours after, when his wife, not knowing what was done, came in. And Peter answered unto her, tell me, whether you sold the land for so much? And she said, yes, for so much. And then Peter said unto her, how is it that you have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried your husband are at the door, and shall carry you out. Then fell she down straightway at his feet, and yielded up the ghost, the human spirit. And the young men came in, and found her dead, and carrying her forth, buried her by her husband. Now the sin was not that Ananias and Sapphira, that they didn't give the whole amount to the church. The problem was, they barefaced lied to God by saying that they did give the whole amount when they didn't. And again, the number of dollars in our offerings, our holy day offerings, is not the important thing. The important thing is the attitude, the thought, the effort, and the preparation that goes into our offerings. We knew a young church family, going back quite a few years now, in Victoria, and the husband, the dad of the family, had been laid off from his job, and the fall holy days were coming up, and he didn't have any money for a holy day offering. So this enterprising young dad took his family one Sunday afternoon. He created a Sunday afternoon family outing. And they hiked along a highway, a safe and pleasant stretch of highway, retrieving cans and bottles that litter bugs had thrown from their cars. And they obviously turned those cans and bottles in, got the money for them, and they had a holy day offering. Now, some people might turn up their noses at that kind of effort, and it's certainly not, you know, something that everybody would do. But I'm convinced that in that case, that God would have been very pleased with the attitude, with the thought and the effort that went into that particular holy day offering. I think it had a kind of King David type quality to it. In recent years, I think, you know, most of us here at this time are doing reasonably well. In times past, it still is for some brethren, for many brethren, you know, and in Canada, in North America, and in other parts of the world especially. It's been financially tough for many church members. Here in Canada, we're forever seeing tax increases and our dollar exchange decreases. They continue to knock huge holes in our already depleted spending power. And for many brethren, and we know many brethren down in the States there who are in dire straits, for whom the term discretionary spending has become a sad joke. Discretionary spending does not exist for many church members. Many church members who are just making it from paycheck to paycheck. Some of them don't have a paycheck at all. But we can take courage that God does appreciate our offerings and appreciates and knows what those brethren who are suffering are going through. And also that we're not the first generation of God's people to have gone through this type of financial bind. I've got a quote here from a book called Jesus and His Times, and it's a description, just a short description of working class life in Jerusalem in around 30 AD. It says, "Crushed by poverty and taxation, the great mass of what were considered to be the urban rabble were largely unable to live by all the Pharisees' precepts regarding purity and tithing, or by the priests' rules of ritual and sacrifice. Their existence was frugal at best and could easily slide off into grinding, impoverished misery. Here, the common people lived in and around Jerusalem, day laborers who awoke each morning freshly unemployed. Here too were the chronic unemployables, beggars who no longer even dreamed of useful work, the crippled, the diseased, the blind, the insane, the unloved old, all those for whom there was no hospital, no aid, no hope." Now, some of us have been through some of those things. Some of those things might sound familiar. But please don't think that God can't see, can't understand and appreciate what many brethren are going through financially, because He can and He does. And when we look back, and this is kind of a sad look back at some periods, at least in our Church of God history, and I first gave this as a sermonette, a Holy Day Offering sermonette, and looking back, I think that sometimes the Holy Day Offering sermonettes seem to be, the reason for them seem to be whether it was actually specified or not, was to squeeze an extra few dollars from each member. The deacons and ushers would take up the Holy Day Offering, the morning service. They would take it out and count it during the lunch break. And in the afternoon service, the minister announced the average offering per attendee. And even that, I look back on with disdain. It was almost like for those who had given more than the average per person, perhaps they were meant to give themselves a slap on the back. And for those who'd given less than the average, that perhaps they were meant to feel embarrassed into doing better next time, type of thing, you know. There was even, at the Feast of Tabernacles, there was even competition, a kind of competition between feast sites. They'd send each other greetings, or, you know, greetings from such and such a place, saying, and they'd always announce the size of their Holy Day Offering. You know, we got, you know, $16,000 or whatever it might have been, you know. And it was like a competition that was going on, and But despite some of the negative past experiences, I'd like to encourage all of us to, by reiterating that God really does understand our financial constraints and that God does appreciate our efforts. So what I'm saying is, and again, this is not a plea to give more money or anything else. On the contrary, this is a request for all of us to take time to think about, to plan in advance our holy day offerings, to have a good attitude about giving them, and again, finally, to give quality holy day offerings.